This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So the clock has gone 12 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. We were just juggling a few things, but I believe right now we are talking about understanding the work of the GNU Consultations Council. I don't even know if we are 10 steps ahead, because in Gauteng, the GNU just doesn't even seem to have the glue to keep it together. But be that as it may, in other parts of the country, we're already up and running with a government of national unity. And I know many people have cautioned us from calling it a government of national unity, saying more of a grand coalition. But all of these semantics aren't going to get us anywhere. The fact is, arrangements have been made. A cabinet has been announced. A parliament has been sworn in. The car is moving. The horse has bolted. The issue is, certainly at that national level, at that cabinet level, how are decisions going to be made? Decisions around budgets. How are those decisions going to be made? Monitoring and evaluation, each minister or each ministry's performance. How are the appraisals going to be done? The other day we introduced the idea of the PRECA law. Not even the idea, it's a law that actually exists, which requires that anybody in the public service who suspects any wrongdoing, maladministration or corruption must report it. So what happens when you have campaigned on a strong anti-corruption ticket and suddenly your alliance partners, who unfortunately have a reputation for some malfeasance, suddenly you suspect that things aren't going above board? What do you do? Because you're now part of the system as opposed to being outside of the system. So how are these mechanisms for vetting, checks and balances going to work? And how will a GNU Consultations Council help to at least establish the boundaries of how things are going to work? And I suppose it becomes even more important because when we look at what's happening in Gauteng, where the GNU is just failing to take off, where there are disagreements right now on the allocation of executive positions, then there's even more of a reason to make sure that there is some kind of a mechanism to hold each side accountable in a government of national unity. We're joined by William Gumede, who is the founder and executive chair of Democracy Works, the Democracy Works Foundation. He's also a professor at the Wits School of Governance and is joining us now. Good morning, Prof.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. Good morning to your listeners.
No, it is our pleasure. So certainly at the national executive level, it's all systems go. We've seen the allocation of executive positions and the ministers will be sworn in, we're told, today. And then I guess officially they begin their work as of today going into the next 5 years. But because they come from different backgrounds, because they serve different constituencies, because ideologically they've not always been aligned, even some of their values, never mind ideologies, they've always been in each other's crosshairs. How are they going to make sure that things work, that there's mutual respect and accountability?
Yes, I mean, you know, it's not going to be easy because they are coming from different backgrounds and they've been fighting each other for a very long time, and they're ideologically you know, they differ vastly. And then I think the problem also for the ANC is that many of its supporters and BSN members oppose the GNU, you know, or rather oppose working with Democratic Alliance or with the Carter Freedom Party. And they're going to be continuing to oppose it in silent ways, indirect ways, and so on. I mean, we've seen it now in Gauteng, for example, they have difficulties with the Together Provincial Government of Unity, although the part of the package for the government of National Unity at the national level was to get Gauteng also provincial unity government, and KwaZulu-Natal also a provincial unity government. But in Gauteng now, you know, the ANC groupings are really absolutely uninteresting of involving the DA the bigger level they want to I mean they reluctantly they know they have to do that because mm-hmm. it's part of the agreement, but they try to minimize it as much as they can mm-hmm. and so on. So that's already showing you tensions that's potentially also going to play out at a national level also.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, you've alluded to a few things. What's happening at a national level or what's expected to happen at a national level versus what we're seeing unfolding in Gauteng. But the caveat is it seems to be all systems go in KwaZulu-Natal. So perhaps Gauteng is the outlier in this story. We'll talk about Gauteng in particular in a moment. We just want to know what mechanisms there are to make sure that things shape up as planned in the national interest, as the president keeps reiterating, that when six DA ministers are sitting in a cabinet meeting with fellow IFP, one PA and 19 ANC ministers, that there is coordination, there is alignment and there's accountability. And if ever there's a disagreement, that there's a mechanism to deal with that tension.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things is, of course, is a structure. I mean, when I was putting together, for example, the multi-party charter with that 11 opposition party coalition, including the DA and IFP, I emphasized to them, it's really important when you're in a coalition or now in a national unity to have a political structure where at least the key leaders meet regularly to deal with issues that come up so that issues don't become a crisis. So I think it's going to be similar, you know, political council at this level now would be the same. So I presume it would include, for example, the general secretaries of the parties or at least the top leadership so that they can iron out things coming out. And then for me, what I would propose to them is also to have perhaps ombudsperson, a conflict resolution mechanism, whether it's an independent ombudsperson or whether it is, you know, somebody who has some kind of control powers, independent, they can deal with issues that come up. So that's really from a political level, that's going to be important. Then there's a third option, it's not an option, it's part of the agreement, is that consensus decision making. Now, consensus decision-making is not very easy. Mm. The ANC is used to majority decision-making. From majority decision-making, you've got majority. If your partners disagree, you use your veto and you discontinue. But in a consensus decision-making, you can't do that. You have to compromise also and give something. And, of course, your partners have to lose something. But, you know, all sides must lose something. And there's no like win-win. Okay. Like the win-win if everyone loses. So that needs to take a bit of a culture to get used to that.
Okay. So apparently they are establishing a GNU Consultations Council. And that's where big decisions must be made. We know that, for instance, Professor Kumete, that each year when the finance minister tables a budget, he didn't just make that budget up in the treasury. He has consulted with different ministries and departments about their needs, their priorities, their plans for the year ahead, their costings and budgets that are needed. And then those are brought to cabinet to be discussed and approved. So by the time the minister has, done the mathematics, there've been sufficient conversations in cabinet about how money ought to be spent in terms of national priorities. So this consultations council is meant to be an additional sort of platform for these kinds of decisions on budgets, policy priorities, programs to be pursued and the like.
No, absolutely, because the challenge again is for them is going to be to decide on the core policies. Now, in a government of national unity or any other kind of coalition, it doesn't mean the parties will have to be on everything. And, often people ask me, well, because there's so many different ideologies, can a coalition work? I mean, around the world, the most successful coalitions actually are coalitions where there are really deep, real, real deep, ideological differences. So ideological differences is not, the test for whether if something will work out. I mean, I've seen in Brazil right now with Lula da Silva, the Greater Workers' Party is in a coalition was right-wing Catholic parties. You know, so it was a very vast difference, but they are co-governing smoothly. So what the issue is really is to agree on the priorities that everyone can agree on. You know, five or six, maybe in a sense, what are the national priorities for South Africa? You know, the top ones.
Yeah.
I mean, there's about six, seven, eight, and then agree on that, and then agree to disagree on all of the others. And the budget is going to be quite difficult because, you know, the budget is ultimately the biggest tool for distribution and for services and so on. So they'll have to agree on the top priorities in the budget and then leave all of the smaller priorities aside.
Okay.
So that's going to be perhaps the first, almost, you know, one of the first things I have to sit down and talk to.
Okay. So this is where, I mean, I quite like tangible examples. So this is where, say, a new minister of basic education comes in and says, I believe we should be focusing on, I don't know, sponsored laptops in schools. She brings that to cabinet, they work it out, and then they cost it, and then they begin with that program as part of digitalization in the schooling system, if I was just to make an example. But all of these will happen in a consultations council.
So you know, that sort of council will not determine what happens at a ministerial level. You know, sort of the way government works, there is sort of the big issues, let's just say,
macro,
on the education,
because
we're talking through that now. We'll say, you know, the government schools, which we know is the worst, I mean, really compared even to our emerging markets. So that has to be dealt with, black schools and the black child's education. We'll have to fix that as a first thing. So then what will happen is the department itself will come up with a plan.
We'll
have to do. They come up with a plan and so on. And they then go to cabinet and so on. So the one agreement is already that even if you are a DA minister, you know the national priority is the black child in the poor schools.
Okay.
So, you know, so that's clear. So that how you're going to do it as a minister, now that's up to the minister and the department.
I understand. Okay. So big picture, big vision, national development plan stuff is what's happening at cabinet level. How you implement these big picture issues at ministerial level will be left to the minister and their DDGs and the administrators and their researchers to work out the mechanics, which they will present to to cabinet and this consultations council. An evaluation will be whether or not you're sticking to the broad principles of the country vision.
Absolutely, and that's how it's going to work. And then there's also, people forget, there's now Parliament also, because now we have a different setup of opposition parties. We've got an EFF, MK, X and SA, they used to be part of the MPC. You know, and they are this time, I suspect, as the opposition this time is going to be much tougher than previous oppositions.
Okay.
Yeah? So let's just say that education budget, when it goes to Parliament this time, we're very likely to see more robust interrogation from the EFF or MK and X and SA. So again, that's going to be different dynamics. You know how to oppose a GNU, and I think that opposition, I mean, we've seen, I think it's going to be very, very different. I mean, look at the people, even from an MK point of view, that's been appointed, and then you know, Hama Masaba and Atul Tolop, they experienced people, they now going to oppose. And I think we're very likely going to see perhaps a higher accountability than we've ever seen before.
Okay. Well, what we know is Herman Mashaba says he's not going to Parliament. He'd rather focus on strategy at Action SA headquarters. Athol Chollop will be the chief whip in Parliament with his six colleagues. But we do know an interesting phenomenon, which is the former judge president of the Western Cape, impeached, is now the chief whip for MK, who effectively become the official opposition in Parliament. And whether, you know, they'll be supported on the opposition side and opposition benches by EFF and other opposition parties, we will see how it unfolds. But that's going to be the look of the new opposition in Parliament or the parliamentary benches. Here's an interesting thing. There are smaller parties that have signed the letter of intent to be part of the GNU. They were not allocated any positions, but they did attach their signatures to this letter of intent. In Parliament, do they then sit on the side of the GNU, or do they sit on the side of the opposition and continue to engage robustly? How does that work?
So, I mean, that's an interesting phenomenon. So, now what happens, in this GNU, only the major parties got executive positions in cabinet. Mm. But there are many other positions now for those who sign, the co-signatures, but are too small, to get positions in cabinet. So many of them will get, the heads, for example, of committees in parliament and so on.
Okay.
Parliament has lots of committees. And then in another group, few may get, to head task teams. Cabinet will have to put together task teams.
Okay.
And there's many of those sort of inquiries and so on. So that's how they get to operate. So they will be almost a GNU plus. So in Parliament, they're not going to, I would not foresee that they're going to sit with the opposition.
Okay.
Because they're part of government, they may not have executive positions. They're likely going to be, they will be included, for example, in a council, in an executive council, sort of advisory council.
Okay.
And their input, they will be part of the input, part of the discussions and decision making.
Okay, so this is where we're going to see the Busas and the Rais Mzansis and the Al Jamaas coming to the fore in some of these committees and councils and other formations in Parliament. But they are unlikely to sit and vote alongside the now official opposition. Is what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, because the idea is once you sign up, so even if you don't get a position, because it's not just about positions, you also vote now with the GNU members.
Okay.
There's going to be policies coming up, and they will have to have a majority, and, so those who signed up will then vote. For example, one of the suggestions that's been there is the idea of a prime minister to bring that.
Yeah.
Many countries have a prime minister that then runs the executive and then allows the president to play a much more bigger role. Because right now, President Cyril Ramaphosa, even the last couple of years, have struggled in playing that executive role because he got bagged down by party politics, deputy politics, and so on. And the idea is in systems where you have a prime minister, the president is almost above his own party also and can make those decisions.
Mm.
And the prime minister is held accountable to run the business of government. But if let's say that such a proposal will come to the fore, it will then need a change of the constitution.
Absolutely.
And then all of the those who signed up to the GNU would then be asked to vote for that. So even if you don't have the executive position in cabinet, you'll then vote with the group to try to get that across. If that was, for example, a formal proposal.
It was mooted, and so was the idea of a second deputy president. And the rumor was the second deputy president would come from the IFP side, but the challenge was it would need a constitutional amendment if it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And to that point as well, the deputy president is the head of government business, is that person who makes sure that whilst the president is traveling the world or is involved in administration across the 9 provinces or is consulting with party, that the link between cabinet and parliament, that channel opens, it remains open through the deputy president. That's actually his job.
The problem is right now, unfortunately, the deputy president's job is not, it's a head of government business, but it doesn't have that executive power, like, for example, a prime minister. It will also need, in order to play that role, it will also need, we need to amend the constitution to give it that kind of executive power. That is why a lot of the deputy presidents have struggled. They tried. They like was kind of adds on.
Yeah.
They served. It appears that they served at the president's behest, and the president is not there, and so on. So in the ANC, that's worked. So when the ANC had a majority, the deputy president could use his political power influence in the ANC, that power of being also the deputy president of the ANC. So that's the drink's power. But now, if he doesn't have, it is now government of national unity, so the current deputy president won't have a hold on non-ANC people.
Okay.
And that really is the problem.
Okay, so the issue is not that, there isn't some kind of a structure. It's the executive authority to play a more detailed role is what would need to be addressed. And finally, very briefly, we know the DA has campaigned heavily on an anti-corruption ticket. Even John Steenhuisen told me personally on this show that, you know, if they are considering a GNU, one of the difficulties they would have is the fact that there's a Zondo Commission of Inquiry. It's fingered many people in the ANC, and that even on the ANC benches, there's close on to 70 was the number he used of members who have allegations leveled against them. And they find that really unpalatable. So how are they going to manage some of these complex issues, especially because there is a law called the Prevention of and Combating of Corrupt Activities, which requires that if you suspect any wrongdoing, you do not turn a blind eye. You report it and you act on it. So how are they going to work on it? Because even Helen Zille has publicly said, we're not going to support a Palapala inquiry unless there's new evidence. So you're already getting a sense that the agreement is predicated on letting some things slide.
No, this one, you know, the corruption issue, I think it's going to be the most difficult one. Although I think the opportunity for those partners, the non-ANC partners in the GNU, what they could do, they can actually, in a meeting, they can now actually, in a different way, hold ANC members who are accused of corruption accountable. And how would that happen? They could say, for example, in a council meeting, look, so-and-so is clearly implicated in A, B, C, D. We as the council ask the person to step aside or to respond or to launch an inquiry. So, you know, sort of things would happen in that council politically and so on. But secondly, actually, I think the potentially exciting prospect of the GNU with different partners, non-energy partners, is actually the partners can hold each other accountable.
Okay.
To say, you know, because in the past our problem has been with both Zuma past president, also the Ramaphosa president, in their cabinet, no one is holding each other accountable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can be incompetent, you can be corrupt, and you come as a minister, you report, everyone clap hands, and so on, and you know, you know, buddy system. But now what you'll have is different parties. And you know, they don't need, I mean, they're not throwing an ANC line because in a GNU, you are not the ANC if you're the DA. You don't put the DA line and or the IP line or the Patriotic Alliance line.
Okay.
But you can hold each other accountable.
Okay.
Potentially in a better way if it was just a majority party.
Okay. Professor William Gumede, founder and executive chair of Democracy Works, the Democracy Works Foundation, actually, is what it's called, and also a teacher at the Wits School of Governance. It's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.